are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, August 20th, 2019. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, recession fears have the White House talking about a payroll tax cut. Meanwhile, Trump regulators are about to unwind part of the Volcker Rule, because banks have no history of screwing us whatsoever. The number four Democrat in the House now supports impeachment. Joe Biden's lead expands slightly as he pushes the hold your nose narrative. Them spending millions of dollars targeting state houses. Facebook and Twitter removing Chinese anti-Hong Kong disinformation accounts. Planned Parenthood now must totally refuse federal funding in providing health care for women across the country. New York Police Department, ICE is ICE over the past year. The Israeli occupation gaining renewed, long overdue scrutiny. And the CEO's crocodile tears shed over shareholder value are indeed crocodile tears. And lastly, Donald Trump can't even pollute competently. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the program. We are all here today, getting ready for vacation, which is going to start. It's going to start for me a little bit early, and then we're all going to be off next week into Labor Day. We got to get that Labor Day show, pull that baby as well. And as we say, the AM Quickie will be around all next week while we're gone, so you can get at least the a brief, quick news headline. We are working on getting it out earlier. We hear your emails, but check it out whenever you can. 5 minutes. You could literally go to the bathroom at 9:15 once you get into work. Just play it. Nobody's going to 5 minutes.
Nobody. Or you have time to listen to it twice, once when you're really sleepy and then another time when you wake up more, which is what I did.
Right. Oh, there you go. Yeah. I'm not sure I follow that, but.
Okay, cool.
Think about it. Take it in, bro.
So I think we're going to probably do 2 days of news stories in the wind-up going into vacation. We're going to get to these recession fears in a moment. I mean, the even more concerning to me is the idea of a payroll tax cut, at least the way that I would imagine would be done by Donald Trump, although I wasn't terribly happy with it when Barack Obama did it as well. But first... Donald Trump is very upset that no one has provided him credit with the criminal justice reform. Part of that is probably because he's an idiot and no one believes that he had any ideas about this. It just was something that Barack Obama hadn't done. So he was okay in signing off on what people had brought him. I mean, I think that's quite clear. We're going to see it when we talk about these cafe standards and the frustration that he's feeling that he's being outmaneuvered, not trying to pollute. It's a really tough time in America where a guy can't just pollute and do it competently.
I got my best 29-year-old in the job.
Exactly. But here he is, Donald Trump, at the airport. He only does, or I guess he's in Morristown, New Jersey. He only does pressers at the airport. And I wonder if that's a way for people to avoid hearing the questions. I'm serious about that. I think that's probably what it is on some level, because then he cannot be accused of not answering the question or getting or being. It's just a statement that's floating, untethered to any predicate.
Yeah, that's very smart.
It's very smart. Or maybe it's just like he doesn't, it gives him a quick out. I don't know. But here he is. You might say that Donald Trump is a poet and he doesn't even know it.
Criminal justice reform is done. Beautiful package. Wonderful. They don't even mention my name. So stupid. So stupid. Thank you. Thank you.
Wow.
We got to play that one more time. That's, I mean, you really got to appreciate the...
You guys need to take
this.
You need
to put some music in the background of that or something.
You want to diagram this in?
I am something that might work for a background for this, yes. So stupid. So stupid.
So stupid. So stupid. Thank you. Thank you.
The wind rustles the trees as the plum...
Okay, let's just play it. Let's just play it one more time. Let's
sprouts in spring. So stupid. This
criminal
is
justice reform is done. Beautiful package. Wonderful. They don't even mention my name. So stupid. So stupid. Thank you. Thank you.
This is a Japanese art form. Oh my God.
It's like William Carlos Williams.
The moon pierces the evening sky. No credit for me. So unfair. So unfair.
Baby shoes, good deal. Never worn.
I made deals. Oh my gosh. I made deals. So good for me. For me. But no credit. No credit.
Sad,
thank
sad.
You.
Sad,
thank
sad.
You. Somewhere somebody is writing a coffee table book to sell at Urban Outfitters full of poems like that.
That's true, actually. But there was a... Oh, God. I hope not. I actually think anybody who does that really should be arrested. Frankly,
for copyright, yeah. For copyright infringement.
That's a good, yeah, for copy, exactly. For
stealing, I think they should be property. I think they should be put into the Jimmy Fallon gulag and sort of all right, so here is speaking of so stupid, here is the five. Fox is the five. And this guy, Greg Gutfeld, feels like he's been sort of sidelined during the Trump years because, I don't know. Yeah, exactly.
There's dumber people there.
What do you need the guy for?
Well, what do you need the guy for? And I think he also just sort of realized, like, I can sit here and just cash checks. I don't need to go out on a limb for this guy. But there's nothing that gets a conservative, even ones who are never Trumpers or maybe never Trumpers or secretly never Trumpers or Trump queasy, or just not Trump the support. There's nothing that can get a conservative riled more than the idea of people just not letting go of this whole slavery thing and race stuff.
The problem. So why are they doing this? Is because...
Oh, pause it. I should just say, he's, of course, referring to the outrageous publication of the 1619, I guess, I don't know how to...
It's a series.
Series, yeah.
It's a multimedia series. Yeah.
Which basically covers the implications of slavery and tracks it through the years, obviously, in terms of the institutions that slavery built and the politics and the economics, all of which we are, of course, in some measure or another, living with today, because of course we are. Because it's like we live with the implications of the railroads that were built 150, 200 years ago. I mean, the idea that you could have such a huge part of your population at that time driving the economy of the entire country in many respects, and it not have any implications on institutions, on the way that society is assembled, never mind the descendants of both the slaves and the slave owners.
Writing about slavery in America.
And
so
there's so much data on this. I mean, there's just... But still, it's so obnoxious to keep bringing it up.
The problem, so why are they doing this? It's because racism is a quantity where in the media, the demand exceeds the supply. So they're going to have to keep creating this. They're going to have to keep doing this. And to your point, that slave story, the slave article was probably, I didn't read it, but I'm assuming it was probably well researched. It was probably well done, but I didn't read it. But now my assumptions are this is all part of a greater narrative to paint Donald Trump as racist. So I'm going to look at everything they do as somehow artificially constructed to demonize somebody. And it's not going to stop. It's going to get worse. And we have to admit, this country...
Pause it for 1 second. I want you to just assess what this guy just said. He starts by saying there is a demand to hear about racism that exceeds the amount of racism that exists. And that's why they've got to go all the way back to slavery to find racism to transport it into the future. In other words... They've got to write about history.
It's like doing a remake.
Right, exactly. But
racism
again,
too.
This is a complete denial of the implications of this structural racism that, of course, we know like was governmentally promoted well. I mean, federal government, through World War II, post in terms of things like home ownership. But throughout the country by state governments, well into the 60s, that's why you needed a Voting Rights Act. That's why you need a Civil Rights Act. And never mind the implications in terms of society and what people do privately in private business and whatnot. But so just that premise in and of itself, the idea that like there's a demand to read about racism, but there's no racism. And even if there was no racism, what he considers to be racism, the idea that it has no implications now is ridiculous. But then he goes on to say, I haven't read it. I'm sure it's well done, but it makes me feel like it's an attack on Trump, which is basically him saying Trump's a racist. So therefore, anything that has to be written about race, even though I haven't read it, I assume is an attack on Trump. And because I'm paid professionally and probably also feel this way, broadly speaking, which is why I got paid ultimately and found myself in this position to defend this stuff, I've got to now.
To paint Donald Trump as racist. So I'm going to look at everything they do as somehow artificially constructed to demonize somebody. And it's not going to stop. It's going to get worse. And we have to admit, this country over time gets less racist. Do you think we're more racist now than we were in the 60s or the 50s or the 1860s? It's getting better, but they don't like that story. Things are going so well that they need to demonize everybody.
Pause it. This is the amazing thing that he's so clueless about. The reason why we read this in the paper today is because it's getting better. It is because you could not have this analysis 50 or 60 years ago because we were that racist. The fact that it's in the paper is indicative of the fact that racism, to the extent that racism can get better, but I understand what he's saying, that our society is less racist. But it's still racist, A. B, even if it wasn't, why wouldn't we want to read about this? I mean, as society gets less racist, it gives us the opportunity to actually deal and digest with these problems. And they are problems. They were problems at the founding of our country. And
do you remember the stat on you can do voting predictions based off of concentration?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Slave
this
ownerships.
Is from Deep Roots. This is from a book that we interviewed on the program. You can go back. They have gone back and done a county by county analysis, and they can predict. They can predict voting and all sorts of different political implications based upon the ratio of slaves to white people in any given county. They can only predict it in terms of how white people are going to vote. They can't do it in terms of black people because black people didn't have any vote or political will throughout the vast majority of that period of time. But the fact that we can have these conversations now, that we can have a newspaper, is indicative on some level of progress that we've made in terms of race. We have obviously a long, long way to go.
Also, going to go out on a limb and say we might be backsliding a little.
I almost think that like it's wrong even to look at it as backsliding, as if we're almost on a linear path, because I don't think we've ever been on a linear path. And I don't think it, I think it's just a question of where it is and how aware we are at any given point. And I mean, I know what you're saying, and I think it, maybe it's worse now than it was 10 years ago, maybe, but in some ways, maybe not. I think maybe this is like, it's like when your scab heals over and it begins to itch intensely. You know, there are periods of time where things hurt more or less. But I think that the reason why we have a Donald Trump is because on some level, racism had diminished, and then it tightens its grip because it feels like it's, you know, people are losing even more because society is becoming in some way, some ways, more egalitarian. Not in all ways.
Does he not want us to mark the 400-year anniversary of slaves on this continent?
Oh, you're just doing that. Yeah.
It's a giant subtweet.
I don't remember anybody doing this at the 300th anniversary.
Yeah, it's not like it's 377 or something and they're really stretching it.
I mean, but why did they have to pick that day? Couldn't they have picked a different one to have the anniversary from? Why the 1619? Why couldn't they have just done it from like when the first plantation opened?
It's very, it's very insulting.
Can you
to
just
Trump
imagine though?
You
like,
have to frame that.
Right. I mean,
and
but
it,
you,
and
you
it's
can
right.
imagine, it's imagine
right.
like how hard it is to show up at work and be like, I've got to come up with an angle on this. I'm not going to read it. I haven't read it. I'm going to cop to not reading it. I'm just going to say like, it makes me feel like it's an attack on Donald Trump because they're talking about slavery.
It's not a good look.
That's, wow, sad.
Sad.
So sad.
So
sad. Stupid. Stupid.
Didn't read the article.
Thank you.
Stupid.
Folks, as you can see, you know, it was funny. Last night I was shaving. I was like, we haven't had a Harry's ad in a long time. And I'm like, well, that makes sense. You know, they've been one of our longest advertisers, if not the longest advertiser we've had, short of Just Coffee. And they don't know that we have a bunch of new listeners. But there it is. The next day I show up, clean shaven. And I didn't even have any type of, I think that whole thing, grow a beard, got to be yesterday. But as you know, a lot of guys buy travel disposables. When you travel the summer, you don't have to sacrifice quality for price. You can join the 10 million people who have joined and tried Harry's. Right now, you can go to harrys.com/majority report and claim a special offer. But first, understand Harry's delivers high-quality, travel-friendly shave supplies at a great low price. Just $2 a blade. Keep prices low. They cut out the middleman by purchasing a world-class blade factory in Germany. And now they can provide great quality at factory direct prices. For me, I love the ergonomic shape of the handle. It's understated. Doesn't look like I'm, you know, got a utility belt on, basically, like other razors. The blades are incredibly sharp and they're narrow because I've got a little bit of a nose issue. This summer, you can refresh your wallet. Oh, well, of course, they're also not nearly as expensive as those other guys. Refresh your wallet and your face with a Harry's trial set. It comes with this, the ergonomic handle I just mentioned, the 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and a trimmer blade for a close shave. That's the part that I like, that trimmer blade. The rich lathering shave gel that will leave you smelling great. got a bottle of that right in the bathroom there. Every time I got to hit it, maybe just in case. And a travel blade cover to keep your razor dry and easy on the go. Go to your go to harrys.com/majority report. Redeem your trial set there. harrys.com/majority report to redeem your offer. Let them know I sent you to help support the show. Oh, and it's back to school time. Very close. Very close. And now is the time. A lot of folks are trying to make sure they're be able to put their best foot forward. Schools come back. Breakouts do not have to. With America's number one acne brand, Proactiv has helped fight acne for almost 20 years. Kelly, she doesn't mind me saying, is a big Proactiv, or no, was, or occasionally. She says she's been using it on and off from high school. She says the formula has improved over the years, but the ideas remain the same. It's a great program of skincare that gives you short and long-term results. The best acne-fighting product that doesn't require a prescription, and it's been that way for a long time. She says, I have sensitive skin. Proactiv's program has made my skin smoother and clearer without causing redness or peeling. Now, they've introduced their next-generation acne treatment system called Proactiv MD. It contains adapalene, which apparently is a dermatologist-recommended topical retinoid.
It's a very detailed email from Kelly.
Well, no, this part is, she didn't know about this part. But she's just talking about, in general, yeah, Proactiv.
How well it's worked for her.
This is for treatment of mild to moderate acne. It's the first prescription-strength retinoid that is FDA-approved. And apparently it works by affecting the growth of cells and decreasing inflammation. Kelly goes on to say, it's the perfect time of the year to start Proactiv for many people because school's starting up. Only takes a few weeks to achieve noticeable differences in your skin. And she says it always helped her confidence. Now we have a back-to-school offer from Proactiv. You can't get anywhere else. With your Proactiv MD order, you'll also get Proactiv's on-the-go bag, which features their T-Zone oil absorber, the body acne wipes, and the green tea moisturizer for free. That's close to $100 value. And you get free shipping and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Go to proactiv.com/majority. That's Proactiv, proactiv.com/majority to order. Make the first day back at school the best day ever. All right, let's get into... I should also tell you, folks, go to our... I don't want to play this now, but go to our Instagram account. Sign up. MajorityReport.fm on Instagram. MajorityReport.fm on Instagram. We'll put a link in our podcast feed. You're going to see one of... It is, I would say, I don't know that I've ever seen a video that mentions the name Sam that got the reaction that this video got. I saw people in the feed like spitting up their coffee, people just writing WTF. In fact, when Dorsey sent it to me from our Instagram account, that was my response. I was like, what the F is this? People are like, I thought it was a deep fake.
There's a lot of deep fake paranoia. A
lot of deep fake paranoia. Check it out. Tomi Lahren, folks, I want to just dispel the rumors right now. We've never even met. But sometimes... right is right, even though she is associated with these conservatives, and sometimes you just can't help but speak the truth. So check it out on our Instagram account. All right, let's get into the recession fears. We talked about this briefly yesterday. The yield curve has gone inverse, or was briefly. It doesn't seem to have maintained. 75% of economists surveyed think that we'll be in a recession by 2021. I don't know. It's a very weird time because in the past, generally the news media was relentless about denying that we're in a recession. because so much of the money was being made on the run-up to the stock market, and so many people were making money off of that. Everywhere you turned on television news, it was all stock market updates.
Yeah, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy too, right?
Well, that they think it does, but I'm not convinced that it does. But they think it does, and to a certain extent, like the yield curve being inverse or inverse yield curve is a function of what investors perceive as what they perceive is things are going. But, you know, we don't know if they are just imagining it or they're looking at signs that tell them. But the White House is looking at different policies in which to deal with it. And we're in sort of a bad situation to deal with a recession. It's so bad that Donald Trump is even having to make excuses for his top economist who he sent out yesterday. You'll recall that we were observing, we were noticing that there were certain characteristics that Larry Kudlow was displaying when he was on TV.
Like optimism.
Optimism.
Big optimistic, Chuck.
And possibly a stroke. But I'm not clear what it was, but somebody said to Donald Trump, apparently, there were reports that maybe Larry Kudlow was drunk on TV yesterday.
Hey, Sam Cedar, you ever write a piece called, you call it Sex in the Country?
There's reporting in CNN that Larry Kudlow may be leaving at some
point. Well, I hope not. I love Larry Kudlow. I think he's done a fantastic job. He has been going through health problems, as you know. But I watched him this morning. He was terrific. I think Larry's a fantastic guy, but I haven't heard that at all.
No. Here we go. We're about a day or two away from Larry Kudlow, I think, being fired.
Oh, even a day, not even a week.
I like how Trump's main judgment of his performance is how well he does on the TV shows.
Yeah, it's not about the TV show. He's doing fine. I mean, aside from the major, major health problems. So they are contemplating cutting the payroll tax. Payroll tax, as you know, funds Social Security and Medicare. You pay about, I think it's 6.2% out of your paycheck. Your employer pays 6.2% on the other side, on top of your paycheck. And this, you are subject to the payroll taxes up to about $132,000, I think it is now. Aside from the fact that it really, we should have the cap, should be blown out. Some people call for a donut hole, fine, whatever, but we're just capturing far less of the nation's income that way. Nevertheless, there have been deliberations in the White House, according to the Washington Post. Even though deliberations about the payroll tax cut were held Monday, the White House released a statement disputing the idea was actively under consideration. Business spending, apparently, in the economy has pulled back. RV sales are down. Whatever that means. Well, there's some people have, everybody has a different thing that they think, is an indication of an economy going south. The last time the payroll tax was cut was in 2011 and 2012 under the Obama administration. This was in the time of a deep, deep recession that had followed in the wake of the financial crisis. Frankly, I was against it then. I'm against it now. The difference, I would imagine, we don't know any of the details of how the Trump administration would do it. I'm sure it would be done in a much more problematic way. During 2011 and 2012, the payroll tax was dropped from 6.2% to 4.2%. The idea was to encourage spending. Now, a lot of people think it didn't work because people didn't notice. George Bush sent a check to everybody, which probably amounted to less money, but everybody knew it was a check, and so they went out and spent that extra money as opposed to doing whatever, you know, not being aware that they had the extra money. Although I haven't seen any data on that. I just remember contemporaneously that was something that people would talk about. The cut, when it was imposed, had an automatic sunset provision, and by 2013, it was back up to 6.2%. Why is this important? Because the payroll tax funds Social Security and Medicare. Now, under the Obama administration, because there was so much blowback from progressives who said you cannot cut the Social Security tax because you're going to underfund the Social Security trust fund and the system itself broadly, and this is going to be an excuse to cut later on. So what they did is they cut the taxes on Social Security and the payroll, but they made up for that difference in the general fund, and it just got added to the deficit. I don't think that Donald Trump is going to do it that way. I think Mick Mulvaney is going to see this as an opportunity to starve Social Security from resources, and which will ultimately be an argument to cut Social Security benefits. It's highly problematic. It's also the other problem that we have is there's no opportunity to deal with a recession. Or let me put it another way. There's a limited opportunity to deal with a recession because the way that you deal with a recession is to cut interest rates. But at this point, our interest rates are around like, what, 2.25% or something to that effect? I'm not 100% sure, but they're low. And when they're low, it means that you don't have room to lower them. There is no magic number. It's all relative on some level. So there's only so much cash you can inject into the economy through monetary policy at this point because we're just not that, interest rates are just not that high to begin with. The other problem is, of course, is that these people are not going to spend. They're going to cut taxes. They know they can't cut taxes for rich people anymore. And we know that as far as tax cuts go, the only ones that are effective are for middle-class people in terms of juicing the economy. And even then, it's not the most efficient way. The most efficient way is to spend, is to actually put money in people's pockets and you could direct where it goes. The problem with the Trump tax cuts, not just from a wealth inequality standpoint, not just in terms of a plutonomy and then a plutocracy standpoint, were that giving money to rich people does not help the economy. Giving money to people living in poverty, giving money to people living paycheck to paycheck, giving money to people who barely save any money, that helps the economy because they turn around and they spend those dollars. But when you give money to rich people, it's not like they have new things to buy. They just use that money to create more money. They buy stocks. They inject capital maybe into some companies, but there's no efficiency involved in that. So there's just not the same opportunities to deal with a recession if we do hit one. Donald Trump is just trying to figure out a way right now to punt this into 2021. Either he'll be president for a second term, he'll escape prosecution. If he's fortunate, he'll die in office. Or it'll be a Democrat that takes the hit on the economy. And believe me, it'll be a disaster. The way they'll go after the Democrat, whoever it is, it'll be a disaster. They will say, you have no money. People in Congress, in the Senate, they will say, we have no money to do these plans. We have no money to do this. We have no money to do that. It's a real concern. But it's a very weird media time, too, because I just don't recall, and I've only lived through, I don't know, 3 or 4 recessions as an adult, maybe even less. I don't recall this perspective by the media, one where they're not in full-on denial. But
man, if Bernie or maybe Warren isn't president when the recession hits, it's going to be so much worse.
I think it's going to be, I don't know. I mean, I think it depends on what you mean by worse.
Like, they're the only ones who would do what they need to do in order to help us out of it.
The problem is, yeah, I mean, the question is going to be, can they get the Senate and the House to do what needs to be done? There's no president who's going to be able to do it alone. There's just not. And they're going to need the Senate and the House. So I don't know. I don't know. I could come up with like five different scenarios. I don't know if there's a way to tell. I think you go with the president you want to have and deal with it. But it's not inconceivable to me that a Senate would be hostile to Bernie Sanders and try and clip them more than Joe Biden will come in and be like, I'll give you a huge tax cut again or whatever it is. I don't know. But it's going to be ugly. And just in case that there's a desire to make it even uglier, the FDIC board apparently is voting this morning, and maybe they've already voted. They're going to roll back part of the Volcker rule, which basically prohibited banks largely from placing their own bets. They could do some things that were sort of more like best practices, certain hedges, certain like currency purchases, if it was, to protect the assets of the bank. But they no longer were able to use deposits and to do their own sort of hedge funds, and basically just gambling with other people's money. And now they're going to have basically more latitude to do that. This was a big problem back in 2008, but that was so long ago. Who could remember? Who's around to remember such things? Basically, it uses the banks as, or I should say, the depositors as a backstop. We'll use their money that's in our bank accounts, not just for loaning out in, safe, bland, vanilla loans, but now we'll also get in there and go to the roulette table. It's all FDIC insured. So the taxpayers will just have to pay for it if we blow it. I mean, that's basically where we're at. This is a rule that went into effect 4 years ago. That's a long time. You get a little bored of those things after a while. So that's where we are in terms of the economy. And, of course, unleashing the banks right now is a little bit of a seems a little bit terrifying and irresponsible, but
it'll be fine.
Everything's going to be fine.
Don't worry about it.
Let's just get the Fed rates down to about 0.25.
Records all over the place.
Meanwhile, speaking of the presidential elections, new polling's out. Biden's lead seems to be durable for the time being. I think we will have a much better sense within 2 months. I still stand by my prediction that he will be third in the polls by the end of October. Two more debates, I think, should be able to do it. People paying attention should be able to do it. Increasingly, though, I will admit this. I may be wrong about the where he is in the polls, but my concerns about it have increased. When you are in August, a year and a half out from the general election, and you are pitching yourself, now granted, this is not Joe Biden pitching himself, this is his wife, who's a politician's wife. She's not freelancing here, folks. when you are pitching yourself as the candidate you may not like, but is probably the best, you've got a problem. Like when you are conceding publicly as a pitch that many of you do not like the policies and know that he's not good on this stuff, you're basically, one, you're depressing your own supporters by making them wonder, like, wait a second, what? But you're also basically just saying, we want the least energized, the least committed, the least enthusiastic base of support we could possibly muster for this. And that's going to carry us over the victory, over the winning, the finish line.
We want idiots that vote.
But she's not even, it's worse than that. She wants smart people who are willing to suck it up. And now, I understand on some level, if you're saying this as a last-ditch effort in the general election, I get it. But we're in the middle of the primary, and she's having to say this.
But she's saying, like, that's their base, is, like, people who don't really, they're not paying attention to healthcare as much as.
So, yes, your candidate might be better on, I don't know, healthcare than Joe is. But you've got to look at who's going to win this election. And maybe you have to swallow a little bit and say, okay, I so personally like so-and-so better. But your bottom line has to be that you have to be careful. Because I know that not all of you are committed to my husband. And I respect that. But I want you to think about your candidate, his or her electability, and who's going to win this race. And so if you're looking at that, you've got to look at the polls. And, a lot of times I say, polls don't mean anything. Polls don't mean anything. But if they're consistent and they're consistently saying the same thing, I think you can't dismiss that. I mean, you all deal with facts. So I think if your goal, I know my goal is to beat Donald Trump, we have to have someone who can beat him. And so if you look at the polls, if you look at Joe with his record with independents, we can't just have Democrats who are going to win. We have to include everybody. Our party has to be more inclusive, which means we have to go to independents and say, join us. We have to go to Republicans and say, okay, you're a Republican, but you can't tell me that your children are proud of the president, of the things he says.
Well, pause it. Wait a second. This part is even just the most reprehensible. I have two words for Dr. Biden in terms of this. You can't tell your children. Jason Chaffetz. It took him about a week and a half to go from I can't look my daughter in the eye after he says I grab the vagina. I don't know why I thought that would be less likely to get demonetized than...
It's a clinical thing.
I can't.
After I grab the woman's private area. Is that okay, YouTube?
Private
please
area.
Please keep giving me
and then
money.
A week later, the guy comes back and goes, it turns out she was cool with that.
Good. Children are proud of the president, of the things he says. You can't, as a mother or as a father, how can you be proud of that president as a leader? And I think if you look at where Joe is in the polls in Michigan, in Ohio, in Pennsylvania, where we're both from, he's leading all the other candidates. So yes, your candidate might be better on, healthcare than Joe is. But you've got to look at who's going to win this election. And maybe you have to swallow a little bit and say, okay, I personally like
this.
Is
she repeating herself again?
But,
actually, I think they spliced the clip.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Did she just admit that her husband is bad on healthcare?
Yes.
My wife says she don't like me.
There's
but
a lot
I'll
of people better
race.
Than him. I mean, look, the reality is that the polls show that at least the top three candidates could beat Donald Trump. But we also know that the polls showed that Hillary Clinton could beat Donald Trump. And to the extent that we can draw any parallels from 2016 to now, I've said many times before, there's a perfect storm. There's a lot of different things that matched up that were really, that were within and without Hillary Clinton's ability to control that impacted the final outcome of that election. But the one thing that we can say that is true and that I think allowed it to be as close as it was the lack of enthusiasm for her candidacy, broadly speaking. And to have a candidate for whom the enthusiasm is so low, let's make it clear here. Like, there were obviously hardcore Hillary Clinton supporters. There are not hardcore Joe Biden supporters. Like, there is a far greater deficit. If their appeal at this point is to concede that his policies stink.
Even his own wife is not a hardcore Biden supporter, it seems.
We have many friends who are Uzbeks. Very tepid. And they're good people.
It's like Jeb's mom energy.
Total Jeb's mom energy. It's like sometimes he's incontinent. Sometimes he urinates on himself while reminiscing about running with Strom Thurmond. But he still pulls well.
Okay, well, bless me, Father, for I have sinned.
Do you think that he goes home to dinner and says, like, sweetheart, is there something you want to tell me? And she just goes, oh, shut up, Joe.
I think he says, sweetheart, go to
Joe 30330 and help me.
Man, we are straight up making fun of somebody going senile.
Oh,
it's his fault for running.
Oh, I do. And I don't have a problem with it. I'm just noting it.
Public figure.
I don't care.
No, I don't think.
But look, if the whole argument hinges on polling, Bernie Sanders dominating Trump in the polls without all of the potential downsides you're identifying.
Yeah, it seemed like she was using his winning in the polls for the primary as evidence that he could beat Trump.
No,
aren't all three top candidates are beating Trump?
All of them beat Trump. None
in
of
like
them
even Harris,
spread.
I think
some of them are beating him in Texas.
The one that isn't beating him straight up is Buttigieg. Buttigieg loses, and then the spread gets smaller and smaller. It's like 8-10 Bernie Biden, then like 4-5 Warren, then like 2-3 Harris.
They have to be beating him by enough that they could still lose. Otherwise, it's not interesting.
There you go. So, all right, let's take a look here what we got. That Joe stuff really, I think, is a little bit... It's a little bit disturbing. It makes me more and more nervous,
sort
frankly.
Of depressing.
It's like seeing a train go down tracks.
From the very beginning, I have not been a fan of Joe Biden's. But it really is only since just before the first debate where I started to get that feeling of like, wait a second. This may be worse than that.
People don't learn lessons.
Well, yeah, I don't know.
Don't bring up lessons.
Yeah, I don't know what that means.
We should explore that for a little while.
Lessons?
Let's take up some time.
But a function of politics, not lessons.
All right.
I don't know. Those numbers for him, though, are going to be very resilient. And the disturbing pattern is that he gets, like, not dramatic, but he seems to get, like, these little drops after debates. And then a couple weeks later, he's... bounces right
well,
back up.
The thing to keep in mind is that we are still in an era where vast majority of people are not remotely paying attention to any of this. Majority of people.
100%.
And so things like name recognition go very far. And I would say they probably help Bernie to a certain extent, name recognition, but it helps, you know, Biden the most. In terms of just like the names that people recognize. And as people pay more attention, I think we will see maybe some changes. I hope, but we'll see. All right, let's take a look at this. Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar are are back in the news. This is, we're going to hear a lot from these folks for the next year, because to a large extent, this is part of the electoral strategy in 2018 of the Republican Party, which is to demonize women of color and make sure that everyone understands that the Democratic Party is the women of color party. And so let's just start. Yesterday, there was a press conference at the Minnesota State House. Both Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar spoke. Here is Rashida Tlaib talking about her experience in Palestine as a young girl.
As a young girl visiting Palestine to see my grandparents and extended family, I watched as my mother had to go through dehumanizing checkpoints. Even though she was a United States citizen and proud American, I was there when my city was in a terrible car accident, and my cousins and I cried so she could have access to the best hospitals, which were in Jerusalem. I remember shaking with fear when checkpoints appeared in the small village of Beit Ur al-Foka, tanks and guns everywhere. I remember visiting East Jerusalem with my then husband and him escorted off the bus, although he was a United States citizen, just so security forces could harass him. All I can do, as my city's granddaughter, as the granddaughter of a woman who lives in occupied territories, to elevate her voice by exposing the truth the only way I know how. As my Detroit public schools teachers taught me, by humanizing the pain of oppression.
And then Ilhan Omar came up and spoke more specifically about what this country can do, this country being the United States, to deal with the injustice that is the Israeli apartheid.
Fortunately, we in the United States have a constructive role to play. We give Israel more than $3 million in aid every year. This is predicated on their being an important ally in the region and the only democracy in the Middle East. But denying visit to duly elected members of Congress is not consistent with being an ally, and denying millions of people freedom of movement or expression or self-determination is not consistent with being a democracy. We must be asking, as Israel's ally, the Netanyahu government stop the expansion of settlements on Palestinian land and ensure full rights for Palestinians if we are to give them aid.
Now, before some of you send me an email telling me that I'm a self-hating Jew, and why is it that Tlaib and Ilhan Omar and we on the show, why do we criticize Israel when Saudi Arabia is so horrible? Why do we criticize Israel when Iran is so horrible or Syria is so horrible? Well, let me tell you what emails I never get. Why do you criticize the United States when there are so many other countries that are just as bad or worse? Like, what? Because the point of criticizing, I mean, look, I don't know if South Africa was the most oppressive regime in the world at the time. Saudi Arabia is still probably pretty bad back then too. But the point being, because one, I have personally just far more invested in Israel than I do in Saudi Arabia emotionally. Two, we give, obviously, $3 billion of aid to Israel. They are far more interconnected in our politics in many respects, at least publicly, than the Saudis. To the extent that the Saudis are, we criticize them. This is the notion that Israel is unique in getting criticism is a silly one in terms of the West or from where we sit.
Well,
I mean,
I just wanna...
we hold them to higher standards because we consider them the only democracy in the Middle East.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even think we could do that one ironically and as a joke anymore. But, I mean, I'll acknowledge. I mean, look, I have a lot more emotional investment in Saudi Arabia. So that's extremely difficult for me to talk
right.
about the that elegant monarchy there and how those standards have fallen. But I think that, you know... One is all the reasons that you outlined, absolutely. And even though we could say on a relative scale, there's no doubt that being in Saudi Arabia would, in the aggregate, be worse in many respects. Although, frankly, I don't know if you're Palestinian, but certainly if you're even an Arab as a second-class citizen inside 67 borders. But there is something very specific and very unique about apartheid conditions and about having a system that specifically administers two entirely different sets of rules for people based on their ethnic identity. And I mean that in some respects, that is actually very unique in the world. Apartheid South Africa was unique. The Jim Crow South was unique.
Right.
Israel is unique. Western Sahara is unique. And I think now clearly Kashmir is becoming increasingly unique. And that, though, having a set of conditions like that, that if, you know, literally roads for different people,
right, that is
entirely
so
different justice
right,
systems,
right.
That is radically unique.
There you go. Meanwhile, you know, I've been saying for years that Israel is going to lose the Democratic Party, and it is. And they, I think, have come to this realization. They don't seem to care about it. What's fascinating is that now critique of Israel is becoming more and more mainstreamed and is becoming less and less taboo. Peter Beinart, who 15, 20 years ago was in a radically different place when it came to Israel, part of it is, I think part of it, frankly, is also the past 15 years in terms of what has happened in Israel, 15 to 20 years, has been dramatic in many ways since Rabin was assassinated. I think there has been sort of a growing awareness in the center-left in this country that Israel has gone further and further off the rails in terms of its politics and its leadership and in terms of like where the population is heading. Peter Beinart, who was a big Iraq war advocate and then subsequently made what I think is probably the most legitimate of all the mea culpas, and then actively working towards fixing what he missed. It wasn't just like, I got that one wrong, but I'm going back at it. You know, it wasn't like a Larry Kudlow, like, okay, yay, okay. Hey, nobody bats a thousand. He actively like dedicated himself to understanding why he got it wrong and what he didn't, you know, what his predispositions towards that region were. And here he is on CNN in what I think is probably one of the most dramatic arguments about the injustice that's happening in Israel that we've seen that you could see on cable news. This is a big deal to see on cable news. Israel critiqued in this manner by someone who is considered mainstream by cable news. They're not bringing somebody on, you know, because they're wearing a funny hat at a rave party, you know, and you know, protesting on stilts.
That he's talking about is called MIFTA, which is an organization that in the past has published articles on their website using phrases like blood libel, which in the past on their website has praised Palestinians who've carried out attacks against Israelis. And this was the organization that was involved with the planning of that trip. Now, you heard Ilhan Omar refer to that obliquely in her statement, but is that a type of organization that you should be connected with as a U.S. member of Congress?
Palestinians don't have to be saints in order to deserve the basic rights that all of us take for granted, right? Miftah has said things that I disagree with. They made an anti-Semitic statement that they apologized for. The point is, when you go there, I say this as an American Jew. My children go to Jewish day school. I lead services in an Orthodox synagogue. Judaism is at the center of my life. The first time I went to spend time with Palestinians in the West Bank, it was a shattering experience. The only thing I could imagine would be similar for American would be going to visit the Jim Crow South. When you see people living under the control of the state with no rights, they cannot become citizens. They cannot vote for the control for the state that controls their lives. They do not have free movement. They need a pass to move from city to city. They live under a military legal system. The consequences are more brutal than we can imagine sitting here. So do I agree with Miftah? Of course not. I had a close friend who was killed in a suicide bombing. But Palestinians don't. You could have made the same argument if you went to visit SNCC and said, oh, they were connected with communists. Some of their people have made anti-white statements. The point is, what Ilhan Omar said is the most important point. People need to go and see for themselves. I've never seen anyone who's gone and seen for themselves and not been transformed by the experience.
That, I think, is true and apolitical, that it is worth going to Israel, worth going to the West Bank so you can see for yourself. You get a real sense of the situation on the ground. Rich Lowry, on the subject of Miftah, the other side of that is that there has been a congressional trip that was led by Miftah before, and the Israeli government let it happen. Now, I know it was before the actual law was passed, but they didn't need a law to keep people out if they didn't want to, but they allowed it to happen before. Now they're not, and claiming it's because of this organization.
Yeah, well, obviously the proximate cause here was the Trump tweet, which highlighted this and made it a major issue. But there is a law that allows Israel to ban foreigners who support the BDS movement to isolate and delegitimize Israel. It's been not applied against members of Congress before. It's been applied against French politicians, against EU politicians. But these are strong supporters of the BDS movement. They are not honest brokers. We wouldn't afford a white nationalist organization the leeway that Peter is giving this organization. Oh, they're not saints. This is an anti-Semitic group that supported terrorism, supports blowing up innocent civilians and children. And no matter what you think of the dispute between the Palestinians and Israel, that is an illegitimate tactic that no one should associate with advocates of.
Want a quick response to that, Peter? Then I want to bring.
Sure. Hanna Shroi is actually very well known as a nonviolent activist, been a critic of the Palestinian Authority, one of the most important Palestinian feminists. There are many Palestinians who believe that Palestinians have the right to use violence because of the daily violent oppression they feel. I disagree with them. I believe in only nonviolent protest. But the point is, every time any Palestinian leader or any Palestinian organization tries to expose what happens, this is exactly what happens. People try to discredit them because they don't want to talk about the real issue. The real issue is an absolutely indefensible denial of basic human rights.
What's that have to do with supporting terrorism? I mean, no one has any problem with harshly criticizing Israel. That's fine. But you don't support blowing up innocent people. That's just a bottom line.
Something we all should agree on.
But
the purpose behind focusing on this is to try to distract attention from the reality on the ground, which is funded by American tax dollars. Our tax dollars blow up the homes of people who cannot get permits to build because they're non-citizens under military law.
Would this be your standard for a white nationalist organization?
They support some terrorism.
With all due respect,
that's okay.
You have
You're
not been there and
me.
Seen this on the ground. I know Hanan Ashrawi.
She is nothing close to a white nationalist. She is someone seeking freedom.
But then why does the organization publish things supporting terrorism?
Rich, I disagree with violent resistance.
Because
a lot of Palestinians believe that because they are subject to daily violence of a system which denies them basic rights, they have the right to respond violently. I disagree with them. But an African American who supported violence against the United States under slavery or Jim Crow, that did not excuse their denial of basic rights because I disagree with the tactic they were using to resist it.
I mean, it's fine to harshly criticize Israel and the occupation.
Pause.
I don't think anyone's.
Is that true? Is it true that it's fine to harshly criticize Israel and the occupation?
isn't this entire, I mean, look at the Chiron underneath. I mean, this whole news segment is a function of why it's wrong for Omar Ilhan and Tlaib and anybody else for criticizing Israel in this way. I mean, the whole premise of why this is on the news is not because of MFDA. Nobody watching this knows who MFDA is. The whole premise is like they're criticizing Israel. Completely disingenuous, but go.
Using to resist it. I mean, it's fine to harshly criticize Israel and the occupation, but I don't think anyone's be associated with a group that supports terrorism. And this isn't black or white. I mean, they publish this stuff. No one's forcing them to publish this stuff.
There were certain statements on their website. Hannah Nasrallah has devoted her life as a nonviolent activist to opposing an oppression which none of us does not accord with the values that any of us believe in as Americans.
So she doesn't control her own organization and what it publishes?
Rich, why don't you try spending a little bit of time focusing on the fact that almost $4 billion of U.S. aid is used to put children
in
detention.
You're the one distracting from the issue.
This is the issue. You're distracting from the issue because National Review, defended apartheid, and just as you defended segregation, you now defend Israel's oppression of Palestinian basic rights. It's a tradition for you guys.
Look, and if an organization sports
you finally forced Peter Beinart to be uncivil and correct.
Yeah.
No, that's so important. That's all it is. And every argument they have is whataboutism. It's also just the fundamental dishonesty that you pointed out that, of course, you're not allowed to talk about the Israeli occupation. And now it's just all of a sudden seamlessly moved into this lie about this organization. And also, frankly, like, the distinction between we have to have some universal standards. You have to say that there are certain actions that states or groups should not undertake, period, or else we just don't have any ground for anything. But as a broader proposition, the notion that Rich Lowry has anything to say right. about how the Palestinians conduct their struggle, violently, nonviolently, or otherwise, I mean, and they've been saying this for years, by the way.
Well, that's the point.
This is so demented.
And of U.S. aid is used to put children in detention.
You're the one distracting from the issue. This is the issue.
You're distracting from the issue because National Review defended apartheid, and just as you defended segregation, you now defend Israel's oppression of Palestinian basic rights. It's a tradition for you guys.
Look, and if an organization supports terrorism, that organization should be beyond the pale.
And when Palestinians protest nonviolently, you discredit them as well.
So you're saying that, in some sense, justifies terrorism?
Of course it doesn't justify terrorism. I've said again and again I disagree with terrorism. What I'm saying is you're trying to distract from the real issue. The real issue is American complicity in the denial of basic Palestinians.
All right, we're going to leave this,
guys. What's the content of your opposition mean?
We're going to leave this there.
Condemn this organization.
Rich, please go there yourself.
We're going to leave that.
Of course you won't.
It's also just, I mean, of course they won't. And of course, like, this will keep going. Like, this is all they've got. There's
right.
nothing else.
This plays into everything the Republicans want to run on. Because they get the angry brown ladies. They get the evangelicals. They pump the prime for, I don't know, some right-wing dollars.
But this is also why
on.
You really can't. I mean, you know, I'm not just so critical of the equivocating from Warren because she's not my candidate. It's because really anybody in any type of broad claim of center-left politics that still calls... You know, that still says something like, oh, well, when Israel doesn't give them visas, they're undermining their image as a tolerant democracy. It is offensive.
like the framing. As
human
opposed
beings
to like,
are
this
in
is,
apartheid.
This is indicative
Children
of
get their
a
bones
problem
broken
that they have
by
in their
soldiers.
Society. Right.
This is their governance.
Right.
And it should be offensive to every Jewish person in America that any Jews are supporting this or anyone is supporting the Trump administration somehow in our name. When, you know, most of their attention is on brown people right now and putting them in camps. Once they achieve that, they're absolutely going to try to do it to us.
The Jews.
Yeah.
I mean, we become a lot less relevant particularly once Jesus comes back. Like
there's only one place
are just
in
completely
the world
chucked
that fascism works for Jews. Israel.
There you go. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Head into the fun half, wherein we will talk a little bit more about this, get into the Fox and Friends perspective on all this. We will take your phone calls. We will take your IMs, ladies and gentlemen. All that and more. Just a reminder, your support makes this show possible. You do it. Maybe not you, but it could be you. Could be you who I'm talking to. In fact, it's time for you to do it. Go to jointhemajorityreport.com, sign up, become a member, pennies a day. You will support this program. And as a way of saying thank you, we give you the show commercial free. We give it to you. We give you extra content every day. And you keep us chugging along. Jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, if you want to check out the AM Quickie, all you got to do is subscribe to the Majority Report feed in your iTunes. Even if you're a member of the show, the member show, subscribe to iTunes on the Majority Report feed and you'll get it. We're going to shift over to its own feed in sometime in September. But in the meantime, while particularly while we're on vacation, the way to get it is going to be going into our public feed and picking it up every day. You'll get 5 minutes of news, and we're trying to get it out earlier and earlier every day. Some days are better than others, but we're working on that. Check it out. Jointhemajorityreport.com basically funds that show at this point, too. So, also just coffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Michael, today is Tuesday.
Indeed it is. And tonight on the Michael Brooks Show, Shahid Buttar, who is running for Congress challenging Nancy Pelosi from the left. I don't know, Ben Carson used to say that's a leftist argument. He's making a leftist argument against Nancy Pelosi for Congress. We're going to be talking about particularly his views on foreign policy. Then the great Anna Kasparian joins us. We're talking about Republican initiatives against basically protests across the country and the sort of how that correlates with that really disgusting footage of the ICE truck. And then also the idea of building and inviting left a little bit, we'll explore as well. All that and much more, patreon.com/TMBS, Michael Brooks Show on YouTube, where thank you for cracking our first 70,000 subs.
Jamie.
This week on the Antifada, out tomorrow, we have on friend of the show, Molly Crabapple, to talk about her arrest at the Amazon protest last weekend, as well as the protests in Puerto Rico and what's going on there. That's out tomorrow. And out still from last week, we have comedian Simone Norman talking about the uses and abuses of irony, the pitfalls of normie socialism, and why you should not be a socially conservative social democrat with tanky aesthetics. Patreon.com/TheAntifada.
All right, quick break. Oh, wait a second.
Two new literary hangovers for patrons on George Orwell's time as an imperial cop in Burma.
And folks, with America's number one acne brand, Proactive has helped fight acne for almost 25 years. I think I remember my sisters using that stuff.
Wow.
Now they have their next generation of acne treatment. It's called Proactive MD. It is dermatologist recommended. It's apparently a topical retinoid, which I vaguely remember that term, retinoid. And it's used to treat mild to moderate acne. Check it out. Order now. You'll receive Proactive's on-the-go bag, which has got their T-Zone oil absorber, their body acne wipes, and their green tea moisturizer for free. That's a $100 value, ladies and gentlemen. And you get free shipping and a 60-day money-back return. Go to proactive.com/majority. That's proactive, proactive.com/majority. Check it out. See you in the fun half.
You are in for it.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun.
Are you ready?
Who sent us this?
Alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back. Back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
The alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back. Back, back, back.
Just wanna degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back. Back.
I take all of it in my throat.
Alpha males are back. Back, back, back.
Almost as what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman!
And the alpha males are back, back, back.
I am a total cunt.
Can we bring back DJ Dannerke's song, please?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Dannerke.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough of a break.
That's fucking nonsense.
Hey, folks! Reminder!
I do not have Parkinson's.
And the alpha males are
psych. Fuck them. Fuck them.
Almost says what?
What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What?
Almost says what?
Hell of a bank. Hell of a bank. Hell of a bank. Hell of a bank.
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black African. And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black.
Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100. Can't knock the hustle. Come on!
Fuck them! Fuck them! Fuck them! Fuck them! Fuck them! Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday! Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are back, back. Africans are black.
Black. Come on!
What?
Come on!
What?
Come on! Someone needs to pay the price for blasphemy around here!
I am a total
pussy. Pussy, 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 pussy.